To order.
It's not my job.
If they don't.
Call this meeting to order.
Then they'll lose.
January 28th, 4 o'clock. Council Conference Room 8 floor. Need approval of a minutes.
So moved.
January 4th. Is that second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Ayes have it. Agenda item number 3, R14-034. Consenting to the appointment of Beatrice Patton Dixon, the Newcastle County Ethics Commission, Councilmember Street.
Yes. Did you name everybody?
Mr. President, Mrs. Dixon is here to come forward, and I can't say enough about her.
Councilman, sir, before you go ahead, I forgot to call roll. Present are council members Kilpatrick, Smiley, Bell, Street, Powers, Cartier, and Retta, and President Bullock and my aide, Anthony DeFerrin. Please continue, sir. Joining us, council member Whiter.
Mm-hmm. We're going to have
somebody interview, man. Mrs. Dixon's resume, I think everybody has. If you don't have a copy, I have a copy here. Her service in this community in a variety of capacities over the past 39 years that I've been involved in public service is outstanding, impeccable. She may not want to acknowledge this or admit this, but the fact of the matter is she is indeed one of my mentors. She mentored me in educational advocacy. She mentored me in community work. And of course, she was also one of the founding members of the former Coalition Save Our Children. And she and I was called the chairman, but we were actually co-chairperson. Overall, Mr. President, she has an established record of integrity, an established record of being passionate about community work. She's dedicated. And I've known her to be nothing but fair and consistent in everything that she does. So I'm very, very pleased and proud to make this recommendation for her to sit on the Ethics Commission.
Thank you, Councilman, for your comments and recommendation. Ask Ms. Dixon if she would take the center seat, please, ma'am. Good to see you. Council members, you have her resume.
I'm going to get my thermometer out to measure the temperature of the hot seat.
Let's cool down.
It wasn't too hot when I was
cool down. The seat next to your left probably is a little warmer. Any comments or questions? Yes, Council Member Weiner.
Yes, we have met before,
yes.
But I'm very impressed with your resume. I like the fact that from 1970 to 72, you were attending University of Pennsylvania Law School with a major area emphasis of constitutional law. Mm-hmm. I didn't graduate until 3 years after you from Temple, but I can tell you I always enjoyed my trips over to UPenn Law School to the Hallett Halls.
And I, your dean, of course,
yes,
with whom I was very familiar, and he was a very wonderful and personable person. Yes.
Yes, he was. It's an honor that we've named the law school after him, as well as some of our other esteemed professors.
It was.
Yes. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Any other comments or questions? Councilmember Hollins.
Thank you, Mr. President. I definitely have to say that I've known Dean for quite a number of years myself, and I would sanction what Councilman Street has already said without repeating everything, but I agree with all the things that he said. I've known her to be very, very much dedicated to community, not just in words, but in deeds and the work that she's done. So I'm very pleased that now she's a part of the county government as well.
Excellent. Thank you.
Any other comments or questions? Councilmember Bell.
Thank you, Mr. President. I think just the very fact of your willingness to continue to volunteer to work within community and everything speaks for itself. We not only welcome you, look forward to working with you, and when you hear comments and compliments come from two of our statesmen on this council that we've heard here, that's good enough for me. But we will be there to work with you, and we appreciate you volunteering.
Any other comments, or would you like to make a brief statement?
Well, I just want to say that I have a particular affinity to the Ethics Commission. During the 70s, I served as the administrative assistant to the president of Newcastle County Council, and at that time, I also worked with the Newcastle County Ethics Commission. I was a staff member assigned, and I also had the assignment, Mr. Weiner, of
Weiner, by the way, there's an Anthony that mispronounces the name.
Of a Justine, tomato, tomato. Yes. Okay, Weiner is fine.
I like that.
I love it.
Motion approved.
Thanks for the clarification.
And it was interesting back then. It was a challenge, but I really enjoyed that opportunity to serve then, and I think this is just a continuation.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for your past service, and we need you, and you come well qualified. We look forward to working with you. Any other comments or questions? Thank you, Councilman Street, for bringing forth a worthy candidate. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much.
I want to thank you all. I want to thank you, Mr. President Pro Tem,
yes,
all the council members, and I want to particularly thank my friend, Mr. Street.
There goes my vote.
And I look forward to serving Newcastle County.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Joining us is Councilman Hollins.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Agenda item number 4, R14-038, authorizing the county executive to sign a more memorandum on of understanding between Newcastle County and the Good Fellowship Club of Chester County, Inc., DBA, the Good Fellowship Ambulance and EMS Training Institute. Councilmember Bell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I understand and I extend my appreciation to Council President Pro Tem Penrose Hollins for chairing the last Public Safety Committee meeting. I had a medical procedure that done that specific day and was unable to make the meeting. And I understand that it was an extremely successful meeting. There was an excellent presentation made by our Public Safety Department, in specific Chief Tan and our Emergency Medical Services Division, in reference to this upcoming paramedic class with Good Fellowship. What's happened since then is we ran into some bad weather. We've had some meetings that have been canceled and everything, and unfortunately, in the essence of time, to get this contract in place so that the deposit can be made and contract Good Fellowship to do the educational piece of it, we are bringing this forward tonight under an item L, under other, and continuing to ask Council for its support. This would allow the initial invoice to be paid on February 10th, $15,000, $1,000 for each of the 15 paramedic recruits, and then subsequently in FY 2015, $82,500, which is $5,500 per student, would be paid in July, and then in October, the total being $165,000, and overall the total project $180,000. So we're here before Council today asking for consideration to allow this agreement to be signed, a memorandum of understanding and agreement to be signed by the County Executive.
Thank you, Councilmember Weiner.
Yes, I'd just like to add a few thoughts to sponsor Mr. Bell to say that I look forward to supporting it, understanding that my citizens and Chester County residents share two of the same watersheds, the Neimans Creek watershed and the Brandywine River watershed. The artificial line is immaterial when it comes to public safety and fire. And so to our neighbors to the north, where I lived for the first 14 years of my life in Westchester, I certainly applaud this initiative and look forward to supporting it with my vote.
Thank you.
Any other comments, Councilman Hollins?
Thank you, Mr. President.
Yes,
I'm also going to be supporting Councilman Bell tonight. I just want to point out that on our printed agenda for the meeting, I believe that the title is maybe not sufficient. I think on the printed agenda for tonight's meeting, it says something like authorizing the county executive to sign certain contracts. It really doesn't. So I think when we get to the item L, we need to pay attention to that to make certain that we're saying what we're doing.
Absolutely.
Any other comments? Any comments from the public? Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Agenda item number 5, ordinance 14-001, amend the pay plans and rates of pay for non-union classified service employees. Remove the pay plan and rates of pay for non-union classified service employees hired on or after July 1, 2011. Anyone from administration want to speak to that?
Mr. President, Laura Hay from HR.
See you, Laura.
Good afternoon. There's not a lot to say. It's just that this removes the 19-step pay plan for merit employees and adds 5 furlough days. Is that correct? Other than that, it's pretty straightforward.
Thank you.
Happy to answer any questions.
Any questions or comments from council? Any public comment? Seeing none, thank you, Laura. Agenda item number 6, ordinance 14-002, amend the pay plan and rates of pay for classified service employees. Represented by the Delaware Public Employees Council 81 AFSCME and its and AFL-CIO and its affiliate Local 459 by amending the pay grade and rates of pay for the position of classifications, pipe layer, and electrician. Again, Laura, would you speak to that, please?
Yes, Mr. President. It's just the 2 positions that are changed. I think I spoke about this briefly when I was here last with you all. The pipe layer position changes from a pay grade 16 to a pay grade 18. That was negotiated and to some extent is a recognition of the safety issues that pipe layers confront doing fairly dangerous work and being below ground. The other change is the electrician, and that goes from a pay grade 19 to a pay grade 21. That's tied to a licensure requirement that came out of the state regulations. Those are really the only 2, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Councilman Hollins.
Thank you, Mr. President. Laura, I think this may be the one I did read. I don't have the legislation here before me, but I only think it's that because it mentions 2 employees, and I think it results in a $20,000 bump for each one of these employees. Is this the same?
Good. See if Helen can help me with that. Per employee, I don't believe that's the case, Councilman Hollins. I'll have to check on that for you.
I think in the in the financial statement at the end of it, it's, I only think this is the one that I was reading because I was wondering about that one. I don't have it before.
14 positions.
There's 14 positions?
That sounds
14 positions?
14.
For 14 positions.
52,000 total, something like that. Well,
this is not the one. That's okay.
That's the one she's talking about right now.
In these 2 positions that you mentioned, are there incumbents in these positions that would remain in these positions?
There are. Okay. Yes.
Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you,
Councilman. Any other comments or questions? Councilmember Smiley.
I just want to clarify, it's 2 positions, but there are multiple people in those positions.
That's correct,
Helen. Okay. Yeah, I think that's where it is.
Very busy guys.
Any comment from the public?
But multiple people.
Okay, guys, thank you.
Seeing no more comments from the question on the public. Thank you, Laura.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Agenda item number 7, ordinance 14-003, to amend Newcastle County Code Chapter 2, Administration Concerning County Attorney, or designate approval of executive branch generated legislation as to form and legality. Councilmember White.
Thank you, Mr. President, the county attorney, and members of council. I want to go over this and then share with you some conferences we had with the county attorney, points that we agree and we respectfully disagree as attorneys do. The concern is that in Newcastle County, as the county attorney has stated, there's no central clearinghouse for legislation emanating from the executive branch. Legislation is frequently forwarded without a legal review, and I'm going to hold in abeyance now, inconsistent with county council legislative format. I'll touch on that a second. So when it comes to approval of this executive branch generated legislation as to legality, the county attorney's approval and review as to legality would increase the efficiency and consistency and safeguard against legal challenges. So the purpose would be, for example, if the finance department sends over an unreviewed tax abatement saying a little old lady in Newark would like $60, and it's not reviewed by the law department, we can be sympathetic and say, well, you know, we're not attorneys, we're not reviewing to see if that's one of the stated exceptions that we've legislated. So we go ahead and pass it, and then some big corporation takes advantage of that constitutional hole and on an equal protection basis files suit a few months later asking for $6 million. Or let's go to the very sympathetic corporate neighbor that Mr. Tarabikos represented a week or two ago. And he says, she's a fine citizen. And Larry Tarabikos, of course, is being paid to champion for her. We're not legal counsel. We're not reviewing it, and we don't know whether or not it's opening up that same sort of legal hole. And so what we would be doing here is following a best practice that's followed in every corporation and every government of our size anywhere in the country. And that is to say, we want a legal review so that we are not being required to be attorneys, because we're not necessarily looking forward to the potential legal risks. And I'm not worried about us being sued. We're protected. But I'm worried about our treasury. It puts our treasury at risk. Now, the other part of this that I had put in advance was the fact that inconsistency with county council legislative format. And here's a point where county attorney and I agreed. It becomes a moving target for the law department to have to take on extra staff, which costs money, to have to review this proposal for a proper county council format. And I think that's a good compromise. Now, the other point is that the county attorney has raised, and he can speak well for himself, but I'll address it, and then I invite him to address it as well, and that is that, you know, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. The county council, the legislative branch, which is represented by the executive branch, and the law department ought to also have a stamp of approval, if you will, on all county council, legislative branch emanated legislation. And what I said back to him is that could be used as a pocket veto. In fact, it's not this county attorney that might do it, but some other future county attorney who may not be as grounded in ethics as our county attorney is. I'm also concerned about the constitutionality of it, and also direct violation to the creation of this government, this creature of state government, under Title IX, Section 1152, of both the Delaware and Constitution and this U.S. Constitution. It would be akin to a veto power granted to the position of county attorney, the position of county attorney, who's not appointed, not even elected. Now, at one time, going back in the history, every general manager, including the office of law, had to be ratified by the legislative body. That was changed in a previous administration. So it becomes more imperative for us to ask for this protection. And that, if I may, pass the floor over to our county attorney for comment.
Comment. County attorney, please.
Good afternoon, counsel. Bernard Pepukai, county attorney for Newcastle County. First and foremost, let's just make a couple quick comments. I want to, first of all, applaud Councilman Weiner for his efforts. I understand what he is attempting to do with this legislation, and I believe his efforts are noble. So, as usual, I applaud him for all that he does. On this particular piece of legislation, the Office of Law respectfully disagrees with how this legislation is designed. I don't believe that it would serve the intended purpose that Councilman Weiner wants to accomplish for a number of reasons. One, I believe that it adds an extra layer of bureaucracy in the process. Two, I believe that it may not account for appropriation of resources. Three, I believe that it doesn't make as much sound. It's not as sound when you only direct legislation for a particular branch of government. If you want to funnel legislation to be consistent, then I believe that it should be most appropriate to apply to all legislation as far as legality and form. Otherwise, you would have two different opinions on legality and form. So I don't think that you actually accomplish the things that I believe Councilman Weiner nobly attempts to do, but those are my opinions. The will of council is the will of council. I don't believe that this legislation is necessary.
And may I finish now, Mr. Chris?
Yes.
Yes. And so, in summary, there was an excellent colloquy between our county attorney and myself, and I listened carefully. And so I intend to make a floor amendment to remove reference to form and leave the insurance that what we're doing is legal. So both in the title and in the body, as per Council to Council Newland's check, I'm going to do a floor amendment. And in all due respect to Councilman Smiley, I should have had this typed up, but I just had this conversation with the county attorney, and so it has just occurred to me.
With all due respect to Councilman Weiner, I was never the one with the issue. It was you, so I'm fine.
Yes. And thank you. Touche.
Joining us before we proceed, Councilmember Street, Sheldon Tackett, and Retta. Councilmember Hollins.
Thank you, Mr. President. Well, it seems to me that, and I'm not certain exactly what Councilmember Weiner's concern is, but I think what the county attorney said is that your different opinion of legality and form is what we have today. Because frequently, information that comes over from the administration, once it gets here, council to council reviews it, and there's all kinds of going over the legislation to redo it, to rewrite it, the formatting and so forth. So we are spending an inordinate amount of time. When you talk about efficiency, it's wasted, because when our attorney sees it and it comes back to my office, and oftentimes we would talk to the sponsor from the whatever department, and it takes quite some time to get it correct to legality and form, and I don't know how we resolve that. It's not a new issue. As I said to council just last week, that, you know, it's been 3 years and two different administrations, and we still seem to have this problem. I mean, just recently with the legislation that I'm dealing with, that's what we've experienced. And luckily for us that the author, the original author of the legislation, agreed to make the changes, but what becomes a sticking point is sometimes embarrassment to me, especially when you're dealing with land use. You introduce a piece of legislation, and it goes to the planning board, and you go through all this, and it comes back, and now we got to make all these changes. So then the council person, who's the face of the legislation, then sits on the floor to make all these changes. And I don't know, it's just discomforting to me. So I don't know what the resolution of that is. I don't know if your ordinance, your recommendation would address that issue, but that's a serious issue for me.
If I may address those points.
Yes, and then Councilmember Kilpatrick.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Hollins. You pointed out a point that I was derelict in not addressing, and that is that our council to council has repeatedly opined that it's not her function to determine the legality of legislation emanating from a different branch of government, only as to the legality of legislation emanating from our branch of government. And listening to her, it's why I moved forward with this initiative. She also would have liked to have transferred to make sure internally that the executive branch of legislation is consistent with our form, but listening to the county attorney and thinking about the unfunded mandate aspect of it, I would say, you know, I would like to at least respectfully meet him halfway. The other point you made, if I'm correct, is about the floor amendment, and it's, which is why I had the rule originally. It's much better if you know about a floor of amendment to put it in writing, and hence I thank Councilman Smiley for having done that today. I would have, but the idea just came up in my conversation just before we walked in the door with the county attorney. I don't know if I addressed your point or not.
Part of it, but my issue was not so much with the floor amendment, because I too believe they should be in writing. But if you come with a substitute ordinance that has changed grammatically, even grammatically, if those grammatical changes are substantial, and a council person wants to know what's the difference between substitute number one and substitute number two, then that council person has to explain, well, you go down to paragraph 3 in line 4, and then you move down to line 6, and to me that becomes a little embarrassing.
Okay. Having heard Councilman Hollins, he makes a good point. I'm going to table this.
Because of me?
Yes, sir.
I didn't know I had the power.
You're on a roll tonight, man. It's you.
Councilmember Kilpatrick, you have a comment even after the...
Well, mine was just on a different aspect of that. I mean, you talked about them approving... Like when you talked about the abatements, and maybe I'm just lost here. You talked about the abatements and that the administrative side would have to approve those before they came over here. I mean, I thought the whole point was they had 5 criteria that they could make abatements on their own, but anything beyond that came to council, and we had the ability. It's not prescribed by the administration what we can approve,
right.
But we have the ability as a legislative branch to go beyond
right.
the 5.
Let me address that. I don't believe, from the seat that I was sitting in, I speak only for myself, that all council persons understood that there have been a number of tax abatement applications which fell outside those 5 prescribed exceptions.
But that's why they come here.
Right. But we're not being attorneys. We don't necessarily understand that if you approve $60 for a little old lady, that's the idiomatic, little old lady in Newark, that we're also opening up an equal protection hole for a $6 million tax abatement using that same hole exception that we've created by some corporation a month later. And all this is being generated after there had only been 3 tax abatements for years. I believe, based upon my legal years of practice, that there's a business out there, much like escheatment, that the business, they are like a finder's fee. They'll go out and identify potential escheatments all over the country, and then they get a finder's fee. I think absolutely that's what's happening right now.
Therefore, it is the intent of the councilman, the sponsor of this legislation, to table this
yes.
tonight. So be it.
Thank you, sir.
Moving on to agenda number 8, presentation from the county attorney regarding FOIA. Mr. Pepkai.
Good afternoon once again, council.
Good afternoon.
As many of you know, we are represented by outside counsel, Mr. Max Walton. But Mr. Max Walton also, in his other side of his life, acts as a professor of public administration for the University of Delaware. And in his capacity as a professor at the University of Delaware, he has done extensive research on FOIA. And he has taught it at the University of Delaware, as well as he has given other municipalities presentations on the issue of FOIA. And since I have had the opportunity to work closely with Max, and I've known Max since we took the bar together, he has agreed to provide an abbreviated version of that presentation to this body. I thought that it would be a good idea for all of us to kind of to learn from him versus myself, you know, taking his presentation and maybe trying to rearticulate that figure. It'd be nice to have someone of this caliber to come to this body and just give us a little overview on FOIA that we all could probably benefit from.
Mr. County Attorney, how long approximately would the presentation be today?
I asked Mr. Walton if he can keep it under 25 minutes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. President.
Smiley.
If I may, in order to gauge my volume of questions with your friendship, is this pro bono?
Yes, it is.
Okay, then I can ask more.
But if you can allow him to go through first.
No problem.
Sure.
Right. Just want to be clear, all questions will be to Max after his 25-minute presentation.
That would be great, and I practice, and I think I can do it in 20 minutes, so I'll do my best.
You have the floor, sir.
Thank you, members of council, Mr. President.
Yes.
I feel very humbled to be here to give this presentation. This is the most distinguished body I've had the opportunity to present this to.
Welcome.
So thank you very much. on FOIA. I'm waiting for my slides to come up.
I wouldn't admit that.
So I say that's kind of scary.
That's what I was thinking.
No place to go but Sussex County.
If I could. I'll go ahead and get started because I'm under a tight time frame while we're trying to pull it up there. Essentially, when you look at FOIA, it has two basic main components, and everybody thinks it's a mystery, but it's really not. The two components are, first, open meetings, and second, open records. And hopefully my presentation will come up here soon. And this is precisely why I never want to start going.
I'm sorry. Yeah, that's okay. I'll leave it till the end.
I'm gonna go ahead and get started. FOIA has two pieces: open meetings and open records. And ultimately, has anyone ever read the public policy of FOIA? And it's set forth in the very beginning of the FOIA statute, which it talks about. FOIA is necessary for a democratic society, so it's open and public, and so that public officials execute public policy ultimately in the public. So the general rule with respect to FOIA is that every meeting should be open to the public, and that's Delaware Code 29-1004. So my view and what I teach all my municipalities is if there's a question whether or not the meeting should be open and noticed, it should be noticed. Ultimately, County Council is clearly a public body subject to statute, but what you may not know is that public body includes any regulatory, administrative, advisory, appointive, or legislative body of the political subdivision. That means bureaus, ad hoc commissions, anything you do. So if you appoint an ad hoc body as for the council to do something, no matter what that is, that ad hoc body also has to follow the FOIA prerequisites and postings and those things. All right. And if you appoint, or if there's a body that's supported by public funds, they have to follow the prerequisites. So, and any time that even that ad hoc body comes in and has a quorum of members present, they have to follow FOIA. And that's even if they're sitting in a restaurant or somewhere else. The great story is, the great story is, I had a friend who was an attorney at a Board of Adjustment hearing in a small town. And he goes into the small town and he gives his presentation. He comes out and they go and changes his clothes and he goes to a local restaurant and he's in a booth. And so the folks next door, and it was the members of the entire Board of Adjustment discussing his application and making fun of the presentation that he made as an attorney, which is clearly a violation of FOIA because they had a quorum present. And a quorum happens whether or not there's a formal gathering or an informal gathering. And under the law, the way it's been interpreted by the Attorney General, that if you have a series of sub-quorum meetings, i.e., meetings that are small meetings, you know, to ultimately reach a consensus, that also violates FOIA. So, and before I go on, I forgot to give my very beginning piece is that I'm here today not as counsel for the county. So anything I say that conflicts with the advice from the able folks at the county law department or counsel to counsel, listen to them, not me. You guys know this. You have to give notice 7 days in advance of all regularly scheduled meetings, and you do a wonderful job at that. That has to be a conspicuous posting under FOIA, and that also goes for your subgroups. And you have to have the notice posted in the place where the meetings will be held. If you reschedule a meeting, you have to give 24 hours, and any meeting that has to give 7 days notice. The only time you can violate the notice requirements, the absolutely only time, and where you can meet on less than 24 hours notice, is if there is an immediate need for the preservation of the health, public safety, something like a hurricane, something like a tornado, riot, something like that. And I didn't know if you know this, but with the amendments to the FOIA statute, you can now participate by video conference as part of a public meeting. However, that has to be that notice. Quickly.
You're in here 20 minutes.
Go ahead, Max.
Okay. We'll give you your time.
Councilman, I'm gonna, you later, please.
I'm gonna try to get through this. Write down your questions, I'll be happy to answer. The agenda, which you guys are all very familiar with, right, is a very, it's defined very broadly under FOIA. It's a general statement of the issues expected to be discussed at the public meeting, right?
Yeah.
And you can change it, as you guys are all well aware, but you have to put it on at least 6 hours in advance of the meeting, and you have to state on the agenda the reasons for the delay. And that's important. I have just completed a case for Kent County where there was a challenge to Kent County's comprehensive plan. And one of the challenges was that the county's comprehensive plan should have been overturned because there was a change to the agenda and the reasoning on the agenda wasn't sufficient to state why they amended the agenda in less than 7 days' notice. So you need to make sure that that goes on your agendas. Mm-hmm. All right? So. People have gotten burned on FOIA, and I'll give you some examples. For example, because the agenda needs to be reasonably specific. One was there was a case where there was a primary election on an agenda, and they said just said primary agenda or primary election was the agenda item, and the actual topic was that they were going to close certain of the polling places that were sought to be done, and they did close the polling places. A suit was brought, and they said that was a FOIA violation. Another example is that when there was a notice of a particular application on the agenda, but it also accompanied a bond issuance by a municipality, that bond, and when they didn't specifically state the bond issuance, therefore the action was overturned. So the big key for FOIA is if you know what's going to be in the agenda, you know what's going to be discussed, it's an important thing. Make sure that's included in the agenda. Because the idea is you don't want to hide the ball. The idea is for the public to know what you're talking about. Minutes. And I know nobody here keeps minutes. Nobody in this room keeps minutes or at this table. But those minutes, at a minimum, I have to include a record of the individual measures, or the individual members present, and the action agreed upon. And that goes for executive sessions too. And executive session minutes can be kept confidential so long as the public disclosure is necessary, but not forever. So those minutes eventually can become public. Executive sessions, and I have been here with you all in executive sessions a few times over the years. This is my, I think, 12th year that I've been representing the county. And they are in a contravention of the public policy of FOIA. So they are very closely scrutinized. They're permitted only if you fall under one of the categories under FOIA. And the big ones are discussion of an individual citizen's qualifications to hold a job or pursue training. So that's for new employees coming in or something like that. You could hold that in executive session. However, that person can request that the meeting be taking place in public, so they have to know it's them and it's going forward. It does not apply to licensure. I was trying to think of an example today for a licensure. If someone came in and says, I'm going to apply to have a license to, I don't know, have an adult entertainment thing, and the council wanted to discuss it, that kind of license, that debate about that license would have to occur in public in accordance with Delaware law. And what I've come in to discuss with you on a few occasions, you can have an executive session for an attorney at law with respect to pending or potential litigation. And that's fine. Generally, you have to state what the matter is, and then you can come in and discuss it. You can also discuss things that are public records. Anything that's discussed, that's noted, or exempted from the definition of public records can also be taken away. So, for example, you can go into executive session to discuss intelligence files for law enforcement purposes, records for litigation, for pending or potential litigation that aren't part of a court. For example, if counsel to counsel or the county attorney wrote you a memo about a litigation but it wasn't part of a court, you could have an executive session to discuss that memorandum. And you can also have an executive session if you wanted to discuss a medical issue or something that deals with personal privacy. You can also discuss personnel, folks, or personnel matters in executive session, because personnel issues of the individual employees, they have to know, because they have the right to have that to be done in public, to have their meeting done in public. Executive sessions, the big keys. First, minutes must be taken. You have to vote to go into executive session, as you all are aware and have done when I was here. You all have to make that vote. The executive session agenda must be specific about the reasons for convening in private, and that's 29 Delaware Code 10002. And there's an attorney general opinion, a very recent one, about the city of Dewey Beach. And in that case, the city of Dewey Beach got a pretty stern sanction from the attorney general's office because they didn't specifically state yet the reasons that they were going into executive session, and when they came out, they made a vote. Under the law, you have to have your executive sessions cannot stray from the topics listed, and you can't have a straw poll. In other words, you can't say, how are you going to vote? 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 You're not allowed to do that. So that's the general executive sessions. I wish I had my chart because a lot of this is up there, but if it's okay with council, I will make it available afterwards to every member of council. Yes. So you have it. I'm trying to do my best without what I had intended to have with me to demonstrate. Public records, and that's the last basic topic here. Public records are any information of any kind, retained, whatever, done by the county, relating in any way to public business or in the matters of public interest. So, and the exemptions to what's a public record are very narrowly construed. So as I tell all my other municipalities that I teach to, just assume everything's gonna end up on the front page of the newspaper. C.E.G. Chris Christie, right? So, what, and his writings, so, and his staff's writings. Non-public records. The county is not does not need to produce things that contain people's social security numbers, addresses, trade secrets, law enforcement files, criminal files, and things that are exempted under the common law. For example, things that are exempted by statute, like HIPAA documents or attorney-client privilege documents. And the rules for obtaining public documents for the public are pretty simple. They have to request them in writing, as you guys all have a FOIA form. They have to be open for inspection during normal business hours. And even if those records are not in the physical possession of Newcastle County, you have to request them and you have to go get them. And that includes your emails, in case they were somewhere else or stored on a different server and things. And the folks who are requesting those are allowed to be charged additional money if they request voluminous or other things. The county is responsible to respond to any FOIA request within 15 days, but if more time is needed, for example, they need to get the documents, they have 15 days, they can request a longer period of time. And the big thing is, documents can be reviewed by council or otherwise to make sure that there's nothing disclosed that they couldn't have. You're allowed to get your costs, and I think the county uses the state format right now. You're also allowed to charge more costs if you wanted to. Under a new opinion that's out, and you can estimate costs. A couple of other things that people don't know about FOIA. First, you under the statute, you're required now in the last 2 years to have a web portal to where you can receive FOIA complaints. You have to have a policy for addressing FOIA complaints, and you have to designate a FOIA coordinator within the county. Those folks are there to provide assistance to find records, and they're also there to conduct a search for records, and they also are supposed to contact you all to make sure they have all the records. Finally, I'm going to move to the end. The Attorney General's office enforces FOIA, but a lot of times these cases don't ever get to court because the Attorney General issues an opinion. Now, that opinion is technically non-binding, but if the Attorney General tells me to do something, I'm going to do it, so it's therefore binding. So in the end, if somebody's going to bring a claim with respect to a denial of records, they have 60 days, and for open meeting violations, they have 6 months. And the burden is on the custodian of the records to make sure that that's done properly. With respect to the Dewey Beach matter, the Attorney General's office voided, actually required the municipality to redo all of the actions that it took to make sure that it was in compliance with FOIA. If you get sued in a FOIA case, you can have attorney's fees and costs awarded. And there's penalties involved with that, which may also include your compensation for participating in the meeting. And the one thing, and I will be the person who gets this someday, for because I represent about, I think, 10 municipalities or political subdivisions now, the Attorney General's office can also do a prospective violation. So if you have something really tricky, you can send it to the Attorney General's office ahead of time. I cut what's an hour and a half speech down to, I think, 15 minutes. So bear with me. I've just been through FOIA, so I'll open any questions because I know you all have had a long day and it sure is hot.
Councilmember Smiley, Councilmember Tackett, Councilmember Shelton.
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify with you. When the AG's office rendered their decision on the Delaware State College as far as the conference call participation in the meeting, this council voted that although council members could participate by conference call, they could not vote or be counted as part of a quorum.
That's fine.
So we exempt ourselves from that. I mean, that's not really a violation of FOIA. That's a matter of operation and what.
And you're allowed to do that.
We like face to face. So I just wanted to clarify.
But I wanted to bring it up because that portion of the statute is new. It's 1006 in the statute. Which
And I will say that we actually sent letters to all the committees and commissions that we have and asked them to adopt the same thing. And I believe the only one that chose not to was the Ethics Commission.
Okay. Thank you.
Councilmember Sheldon?
Yes. Max, a personal email, you stated, say I'm at home and I email Councilman Smiley asking him questions on that. Can that be FOIA'd?
It's a very gray area under FOIA. I think there's going to be a decision coming out very shortly that should clarify that. I can tell you this, under electronic discovery, most of what I do is litigation, under electronic discovery, that email is discoverable if somebody sues you. I'll guarantee you that. There is a FOIA decision that came with respect to the city of Newark that is a little fuzzy on that question. If you would like my bet, I think the Attorney General's office is going to eventually get to the point where they said, if you're conducting public business in whatever form, that is discoverable. But there's this one decision out there from Newark that says it's just from sort of the penumbra of the municipality itself. So my advice to you in my capacity as a professor, not as your counselor, is to say that if you're going to send an email, just assume it's going to end up being public at some point.
Councilmember Tackett, then Mr. McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. President.
And Mr. Powers.
Just clarification. Meetings on Tuesday, 7 days. What day does it have to be posted on?
Tuesday before.
Okay. Because actually, that's eight.
Yeah, that's actually eight. I always do it that way.
Okay.
You know what? You're always safer doing it that way.
Okay. I'm just clarity. We told the same thing, but you said 7-7.
I think it's always
safer
to do that, right.
All right.
Mr. McDonald and Councilmember Powers.
Yes.
Question. Do council members using personal email have an obligation to preserve documents for FOIA?
Under FOIA, again, under electronic discovery, if we're in a suit, the answer to that is yes, once you have a litigation notice that goes out.
Prior to that, yeah.
Prior to that, there's not necessarily a duty per se. But when I say that, this is going to be the next phase of sort of FOIA litigation as they come up. So I don't have clarity on that issue. I'm giving you my prediction. My prediction is going to be yes. But I don't know. I don't want to say that.
We'll just give you more time before.
Councilmember Powers.
Yes.
Mr. Wasserbauer.
You know, I said something about the guy that did a presentation that's had. For us, we get invited to different things all together. How does that work?
Well, that's different because you do not have a quorum of people together. Fortunately or unfortunately, you're a very large body, so it's hard to get a quorum of people together in one particular.
Yeah, but if there's over seven, there has been different things. What happens then?
Christmas party.
Public function.
Yeah. What? Yeah.
Public function.
If it's a public function, and again, this is another gray area, and I will tell you what I've done, but in different circumstances. If it's a public function, if you're not there to discuss public business, you're going to the governor's inauguration, something like that. You don't need to post that. A lot of times, when I did a training for the city of Dover on their board of adjustment, we had the same thing. The whole board of adjustment was going to be there. My advice to them was, and it was for training and it dealt with public business, my advice to them was post it and just say, we're having training on this day. Max Walton's going to speak. Post it. So, but if you just all happen to be at the same sort of governmental function or fundraiser or something like that.
If it wasn't a governmental function. I'm just asking a question.
If, Yes, the answer is, I believe the rule of reason applies best. If you're not there to conduct public business, or you're not doing public business, or you're not there to make a decision, I think you're okay. But if you're going to be there doing anything related to, you know, your county business, I believe that needs to be posted.
And my next question is, just, and I said earlier about the state, how do they caucus?
There's an exemption.
They have the exemption.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And actually, the exemption, it used to be a blanket exemption. Now it's not a blanket exemption anymore. I think they have made that much more.
Because really, my, you know, getting around state legislators, they don't understand what we have to go through. They honestly think we have the same thing they got. Maybe they ought to be educated on it.
No, that's clearly not the case. I think when they opened it up this past time, I would not be surprised if they dialed it back a little bit, the door that they opened, but just because it is very difficult. I mean, especially, you know, with you guys are faced with a lot of choices. You got a lot of constituents, and you got a lot of issues. So, and it's just difficult sometimes to make sure that all the I's are dotted and T's are crossed. So I always take you back to the public purpose of a statute, right? And it's that government function should be conducted in public. And therefore, you know, public business should be done in public. So therefore, if you have a question, or if you're in the middle, whether or not you need a notice or an agenda, or whether or not it's public forum,
I guess what I'm saying is I have to remind the state senator, the state rep, that we can't do that.
Oh, sure. You have to do it all the time.
A lot.
And
it seems, you know, they think, they, you know, we operate the same way they do.
We have County Auditor, Wasserbeck, Councilman Smiley, Councilman Cartier, yes. Councilman Bell, in that order. Yes.
Yeah, Bob Wasserbach. There's a board, I'm not going to say what board it is and what government it is, but there's a board that the agenda is the same every single meeting. It's approval of minutes, then old business, new business.
No business.
Executive director's report, you know, adjournment. And, but the members of the board get another agenda, which has the details of what they're actually going to discuss.
Again, in my capacity as an educator and not as an attorney, I'll just read you from a Cheswold decision that came out on that subject. When an agency knows that an important specific aspect of the general subject is to be dealt with, it satisfies neither the spirit nor the letter of the Freedom of Information Act to state the subject in generalities, as to fail to draw the public's attention to that fact that specific important subject will be treated. So that's from an AG's opinion. So I would say, without knowing what it is, you need to have specifics on your agenda, and there can't be sort of a side agenda. Your agenda can't be the same every time. You're supposed to state the specifics, whether that be for an agenda or whether or not that be for an executive session.
Okay. Councilmember Smiley. Okay.
You dwelled quite a bit on subcommittees, ad hoc committees appointed by council or whatever government body. Clarify for me, would three or four or five, as long as it's not a quorum of an elected body, council or whatever, well, let's go with council, decided among themselves, not appointed, not voted, not approved by others, that they wanted to get together to discuss upcoming budget or something like that. Is that exempt from FOIA?
It's a factual circumstance, right? Obviously, you guys talk to each other, right? And maybe two or three of you talk to each other.
Well, I'm still looking for two.
But if you do it in such a way that you're making a decision outside the public, and you're doing it in such a way that you're creating a sub-quorum, you know, several different sub-quorums in order to get around FOIA, that's a violation. And can I give an example? Because
yeah.
I think this might do it. This is Milton, 2006. There was, I think, seven council members. So they said, well, we all want to look at this property that the town of Milton wants to buy for whatever purpose. So they set it up. So two went out with the consultant and the person selling the property. Two went out again. One went out again. Well, they said, well, that was a public meeting. So because they were trying to subvert the purposes.
They all met with the same person.
Hmm? And they all met with the same person. They all went to the same property. They all did that.
No. I understand it, but all I'm saying is four council members, there's no four, three, It's four council members decide they want to get together to discuss the upcoming budget. So they get together and talk. It's no coordination with four other or five other members of council.
I'm just saying it becomes
facts,
very factual, and whether or not that turns into a subquorum meeting, I can't
predict. Yeah.
It's all on the facts, because if you're subquorum, each one of you branched out with one other.
I understand what you're saying. If you expand that to try to circumvent the rules and the requirements of a quorum, then you've got an issue.
That's correct. Okay. That's correct.
Councilmember Bell?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Max, number 9, it says pending litigation. Mm-hmm. Good enough?
I would say that under the Dewey Beach case, pending litigation, I would say probably not. I have some of the statements, and specifically footnote 9 of the Dewey Beach decision. It says all executive sessions must be noticed in advance and the reasons for them described with specificity. And there's also other language in that. Now, I will say that case is a sea change, because there's a 2007 AG's opinion that says you can do it much more broadly. But I would say that this is my preference certainly would be, and especially under the Dewey Beach decision, to state it with specificity. And there's all kinds of language in that case. And in that case, what they said was personnel and litigation. And then I think they quoted the statute. And in that case, the AG's opinion said, it says when a public body proposes to conduct business behind closed doors, the public is entitled to know in advance what the specific business will be. And that's from that AG's opinion. So I would like to see some more specificity on those, especially, for example, if I come in to talk about a particular case where I'm outside counsel, I like some specificity. Again, that's,
yeah. Could it be a case number rather than a reference to a name?
Yes.
Yes.
And I'm just trying to go through my notes here. If you have a situation where you couldn't, the case law I think is pretty clear. If you just state the statute, it's usually not enough in your agenda. But if there's a particular reason that if you state any more than that, it's going to give away the confidentiality, then you can get away with it. So it's just a very facts and specific thing. For example, I want to discuss a pending litigation, right, that hasn't been filed, that the county is going to bring, and you can't tell anybody out. You might be able to get away with the statute, but if it's just, you know, a case, you know, Newcastle County versus Max Walton, then I would prefer it to be much, in accordance with the Dewey and Beach case, much more specific.
But you can still go in executive session. You're just being more open.
No, I'm saying before you to go into executive session, I would like to notice the agenda. Excuse me, not the notice, the agenda to read that.
Good. Mr. Cartier, Mr. Sheldon, Mr. Tucker.
Just a 10,000 foot view. Freedom of Information Act is a federal law?
No, it's state law.
It's a state of Delaware law.
Yes. 29 Delaware Code, Chapter 100.
Is it modeled after federal statutes?
It has similarities, obviously, but it's not exactly similar.
Mr. Sheldon?
Yes, so let me get this right. If a land use attorney comes and says, I want to speak with you, and you're like number 4, you're the fourth person.
That's different.
It's different because you can go to 7 or an above. You can, one at a time.
Well, if it's not you guys all getting together one at a time to lobby each other.
Well, no.
That's different.
No, but the outside attorney comes to us and says, can I meet you at 12? And want to meet this person at 1.
You have a right to petition. We're getting a little off of this, but it's called the Norr-Pennington Doctrine. If you read the First Amendment, you have a right to petition your elected body. And that applies to people applying to anything. You have a right to petition. And you can't petition a judge, but to an elected body.
Okay, thanks.
Councilmember Tackett.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Yes.
Max, you were talking about specificity. What if we wrote down here, Newcastle County Council, against Max Walton, and Max comes to the meeting and says, I protest, the executive session, I want it held open.
It's different because it's pending litigation.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's under that exemption. But let me change it.
So Max doesn't have, well,
Max doesn't have a right to hear.
Okay, that's all I needed to know. All right.
But let's assume I am employed as the county attorney. I'm employed in the finance department, right? And you have a personnel issue that's going forward. And I've done something wrong, or I have a medical problem, or whatever, and you all want to discuss it. There has to be some way for that person, because that person can request that meeting to be public. right? They have to have the ability to request it to be public. So you might do it by position, right? You say, we're executive session to discuss, you know, accounting personnel in, you know, pay grade 17. You know, you don't have to necessarily call the person out, especially if it is, but there has to be some specificity there. Hmm.
Any other comments or questions for Councilmember Smiley or Councilmember Powers?
In the case of an employee, and I understand they have the right, could you, on your agenda, put, as you said, but under separate cover, notify that employee that there would be a discussion in the executive session and they had a choice to have it open or not?
I don't know of a specific case that that has addressed that particular issue off the top of my head that seems to be... That would seem to be a good idea. Okay. Yeah, I mean, the fact is, if I have the right to request that that meeting take place in public, I have to know that meeting is taking place.
No, I agree.
Councilmember Powers?
I've got a question that kind of goes back to kind of what Bob said. With a committee meeting and the agenda sent to me saying there'll be a topic brought up for discussion, I've called, asked for a copy of it. They said they really wouldn't want it put out till after the meeting. And at that meeting, they voted to accept. Now, how does that fall into?
You just have to be. I'm sorry.
I'm asking. I don't think we would have done it. I don't know how the state can get away with it.
Well, whether or not the state can get away with it, the state.
This is a committee of. It wasn't the legislature, but it's under one of the departments.
I will tell you, Councilman, that I, representing all of the municipalities, you wouldn't believe the FOIA violations that I see in the course of my time.
But I mean, to me, that I'm just asking for us, to me, that would be a FOIA violation. I would have given them it right away. Here, you can have it, read it. But then to turn around and vote on it and accept it the way it is without anybody putting comment or knowing what's floating out there, that's wrong.
It's only a violation if somebody files a charge.
But the key, but the key is, right, the agenda has to be reasonably specific so the public can come there and discuss that matter. That's the key.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Last question, please.
Not a question.
A comment?
Yep. I want to thank the law department for raising the session. For you volunteering, do we get continuing education credits? But very informative, and you know, it was announced at our last executive session that this would be held, and just very appreciative of you doing this.
I'm honored, and I'd like to say the law department has asked me to come in to speak on electronic discovery and other things, and because of my longstanding time with the county, I really appreciate you having me in and listening to me, and I hope I didn't bore you too much.
No, very good.
Thank you, Mr. Walton. Appreciate it very much. I now move that we go into executive session for the purposes of a briefing by an attorney of law with respect to pending litigation. Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Ask everyone except.
Where are we in the hole on this?
Any, I'm sorry. You have a public
comment.
You have a question.
You have a question. Excuse me, point of order. A question on the your presentation.
We got no benefit of
Yes, Jim Park, Stella Form. The minutes you referred to from executive session, can they merely list the item as listed in the previous agenda, or do they have to be specific about what the discussion was, etc.? And following that, is it possible when they come back into open session to say we approved what we discussed in executive session?
That was a mouthful of questions. So let me deal with the minutes, right? The minutes do not have to be public if the subject matter, in other words, if it's going to reveal the confidentiality of what they were in executive session to be confidential about, those minutes do not have to be made public. That there's no requirement that the executive session minutes be made public, because the whole idea of going into executive session and having the meetings is to record what happened and the confidentiality thereof. Number two, what happens if it goes back out in public session? Those has to occur in public session.
Merely saying that we discussed in executive session, is that sufficient?
I do not know.
I now move that we go into executive session for the purposes for briefing by an attorney at law with respect to pending litigation. Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Ask everyone to please leave the room except aide Anthony DeFury, counsel to counsel Carolyn Doolin. Everyone's gone. They're leaving. The door is open. We've concluded our executive session. No votes were taken. We will resume the regular agenda under other. Anything under other? I have one thing. March the 25th will be the county executive's budget address at 6 o'clock. March the 25th in the council chamber. Any public comment?
Motion adjourned.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.